Blog Talk Radio.
Marquee type
teams on the East Coast any longer. So at any rate, I briefly watched. I literally ran past the channel for a couple of seconds. I think it was Golden State and Oklahoma, and then I turned that off. And I was actually looking for a cooking show, and came across Skip Gates' documentary, African Americans, on PBS. You know, it's a fantastic channel, man. I mean, since I've gotten older, I've just started getting into it. I would say the last, I remember, I think my parents used to watch it, if I'm not sure, because they had a television up in their room. Sometimes we watched television together, sometimes we didn't. We weren't allowed to watch a lot of television when I was growing up, however. But I remember the McNeil Mirror News Hour, that's what it was called at the time. And then Robin McNeil, who is Canadian, retired. He's still alive. And Jim Lehrer, then he hosted up, was called the Lehrer News Hour, and then he passed. And subsequently, one of the correspondents, Judy, I can't think of her last name, she took the show over, and then they just changed the name altogether to the News Hour. And that's when I got into it, and then, we can go into the genesis of, the whole history, but, it's a couple of correspondents on it that are very notable and have since passed or, moved on to greener pastures. But, PBS overall is very informed. I can watch PBS all day to the exclusion of everything else, or Create, which is the cooking channel, their cooking channel. They have a lot of shows, and I'm a foodie. I don't eat a lot, but I still like to watch, food preparation, that sort of thing. And the documentary, African Americans, Too Many Rivers Across, was astounding. It was really, really well put together. He has a huge grant, and so he can afford to hire the best and the brightest, and he does. And so all he does is come on and narrate. And host and do on-air interviews, and it's a fantastic, fascinating, really, really fascinating. And it's an old show. I mean, it's not new. I think they're just re-airing it for Black History Month, but it premiered on October 22nd, 2013. So that's 5 years ago, over 5 years ago. So it's not 7 years ago. It's not by any means stretch of the imagination a new endeavor, but it's still timely in the sense that it gives us a sense of our history and our perspective here in the United States, a perspective that many African Americans, especially in the middle class, are upper middle class, you know, whatever you want to say. I'd say people are earning over. $40,000-$50,000 a year. I think that would be the starting point, somewhere in there, and all the way up to roughly net or gross even. Gross maybe $1 million a year. You're solidly upper middle class, and then at that point, you move into another income bracket, another class altogether, and African Americans in that class, man, we have a lot of issues, and I think a lot of them are due to integration, which I remember. I'm not aging myself, it's just a fact. I remember integration. I was a very young child, but I remember, and you think about it, some of these people that were in this documentary, man, are still around, in their mid-60s, late-60s. And they remember all this stuff. Toward the end, they had a piece about the Black Panther movement, man, to see these people. I remember these people, man, And what struck me was the women. I don't know if it were by accident or if Gates was trying to tell us something, you know. I'm not going to get into the, you know, everything I want to talk about, because I don't, even radio is not the appropriate medium. But to a person, all these people, I mean, all these women were light-skinned. And I was like, wow, look at this. And very attractive. And I was like, wait a minute, man. You know, now I remember the Black Panther movie. I really do. I remember them coming in my aunt's house in Queens, New York. And she would always have a big pot of something going on. You know, spaghetti with meat. And, you know, she was a very good cook. And most women, you know, back then, you know, were. It was just something we were expected to do, or not we. I mean, you know, women were expected to do and do well, you know, because the husband was primary, talking late 60s and the 60s still before, you know, a lot of social experiments, you know, caused men to, you know, have to leave the home or to leave or, you know, under their own steam or whatever. And, you know, that's another deep subject that's too deep for this particular show. But at any rate, you know, I remember these guys coming in and out of the house and the newspapers. You know, they had the propaganda, but it was very good, man. And it exposed me to revolutionary thought. And we actually lost you know, a revolutionary sister who part of the Brinks, the NIAC Brinks robbery in the 70s. I think this was in 71 that this occurred. And I wasn't going to talk about this, so I don't have it pulled up, so you have to forgive me if I'm stumbling along here. But, you know, she, you know, Sana Shakur, she was part of that group. Actually, she was older than Shakur, or maybe the same age. They were roughly the same age, late 60s. She passed away in Cuba, which had granted her political asylum. At that time, you know, Cuba was still in the midst of its own revolution. Still is to a degree. They're trying to change now. But Trump, the brain dead, Comic Con, Park, a cool clown in his administration, his dope for trying to roll back. You know, trying to erase Obama from the history books. That's why, in a sense, and this is what I say to everybody, you know, and this is the problem that we had in the 60s with Roy Wilkins and, you know, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and these guys fought, man. You know, they weren't, you know, in agreement with King. They felt he was a young upstart, and these guys were accommodationalists, gradualists. You know, they didn't want all this radical change. You know, they wanted to go along to get along. And Lyndon Johnson was a racist. I mean, you know, people, you know, just like Abraham Lincoln, you know, I mean, people tend to, you know, assign these people attributes or, you know, or characterize them in a manner in which they did not live. I mean, you know, so at any rate, you know, point that I'm trying to make, the larger point is that it's in the New York Times. As a matter of fact, what I'll do to make it simple on myself and simple on you guys is I'll simply post it online. I haven't done a lot of posting. I've just been overwhelmed, and you guys have to forgive me with the loss of my girlfriend, who was my life partner, essentially my wife, common law. We never got married. You know, I'm kind of sour on the institution, and it's just been tough for a lot of personal reasons I can't get into on the radio. But I will post her, you know, because it was an interesting read to Obit in the New York Times. You know, the fact that they gave her to Obit, you know, indicates how significant she was. You know, and see, this is one thing about us, and we talk about the middle class, and I did a long essay on this that Herb Boyd published in a now-defunct publication, Our World. I used to love that. I used to write for them a lot. And I'm so annoyed that I never say it, because I talked to her. He lives in Harlem. I imagine he's well into his 70s, you know, not 80s. And I got to get her on the show. I really do. He used to write for Amsterdam News Black publication in New York City. And, you know, I called him. We spoke, and he said that he did not have archives. And I was like, oh, my God, who doesn't keep archives, man? I mean, it's incredible. But there's no archives. So I don't have my byline. So I only have one of the essays. And I wrote a lot of essays for them, you know. So, and that hurts because, you know, like, you know, as I migrate back into more writing and more broadcast, and I told you we're getting ready to do something different. I really am, and I just hope that the audience, follows my endeavors as I move across various platforms and, you know, try to tie them all together. I have a strong IT background. Didn't always, but now I do. You know, I've developed it. And you develop competencies and skill sets, you know, as you grow, ideally you grow. But, you know, back to this thing in the middle class, you know, this was what the essay was about. You know, I digress. Folks that follow the show know that I always wind up coming back where I need to be. And, you know, like my mother much, you know, she said that, and I talked about this in the essay, and I might republish this essay. I'll put it on Twitter or something like that. You know, I'll create a hyperlink, put it on Twitter. It's pretty long, but, you know, it's my magnum opus. It's one of the, I would say if I had a favorite essay, this particular essay is in her, published it. Because it's a take on W.E.B. Du Bois, the souls of black folks. I call it us black folk. You know, so you put a little picture of W.E.B. Du Bois up there. Yeah, I never forget it because it was one of my favorite essays, really, to this day. So at any rate, there are people in the African-American community, especially, you know, those in law enforcement or in the security services or intelligence services or the military that look askance at, you know, some of our brothers and sisters that, you know, engaged in expropriation, armed conflict, and that sort of thing, you know. And really, it didn't start out that way. This is why you have to look at history, you know, not read revisionist history and understand your history, because this is what they were talking about in the segment that Skip Gates did in that documentary, African Americans, is how the Black Panthers was supposed to be strictly local. They didn't envision it becoming nationwide and that sort of thing. And at the time, in California, you could openly carry a gun. I mean, if you didn't have a felony conviction. And the Reagan administration, you know, Ronald Reagan was in governor then, and, you know, some of the local mayors, especially in Oakland, you know, created a law that said, no, we're not going to allow these blacks to openly carry weapons. So that was the beginning and end of the Black Panther Party in Oakland. And because of the oppression that we were still experiencing in that time, this is in the mid-60s, you have to remember, mid and late 60s, early 70s, but, you know, it started, I would say, in the late 60s in the wake of the assassinations of, you know, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and, you know, earlier Malcolm X. Malcolm X died much earlier, but you had Robert Kennedy, you know, and earlier than that, you had Medgar Evers. So, you know, the 60s, man, I mean, you know, the status quo was that, it was really rough because from a revolutionary standpoint, because the government was really into, you know, the intelligence services were, you know, they weren't new, but I would say that they had a lot more leeway to do what they, how would I put it? Maybe I need to do another show on this because it's a lot of information that I want to share, and I've written about it extensively, but I really can't do justice to it in a half-hour show. I mean, it's really a tremendous amount of information. But at any rate, I'm going to post the obituary of the sister who, and this is why I want to get to Cuba, but they, since the Trump administration has been in office, they, you know, now they changed the rules back. That, I mean, they really, I don't know how to put it eloquently, but they really screwed everything up. I mean, because, you know, the Obama administration had opened up some doors to, you know, given some olive branches or overtures to the Cubans. And now Cubans can't even come over here. I mean, up until the Trump administration, you know, Cubans could immigrate, you know, without, you know, just, you know, as, you know, automatically. If you claim, you know, if you were Cuban, presented identity papers, I guess, or, you know, to that extent, then you, now they can't even immigrate. So, I mean, they really, I mean, this administration is really, and then, you know, I think the other part of it is, and I just want to share this with you, I mean, it just, I can pull my hair out, and, it, you know, I'm in this group of brothers, you know, black guys on Facebook, and I, it's just astounding how many guys actually support this administration. I'm like, so you like a strong man, but that's the only thing, you know. So here's a guy that governs by sloganeering and rules by decree, and you feel that this is someone that has our best. I actually got into a debate with one of the guys that was touting Trump's book, you know, The Art of the Deal, which he didn't write. It was ghostwritten. And he said, oh, yeah, there's excellent stuff in there. And no doubt there is, but he didn't write it. And even if he did, it would be untrue because virtually every enterprise he's ever involved himself in has failed. That's a fact. And anybody that knows anything about math or finances or business or you know, economics, basic economics, I'm not even talking about you have to be, you know, an MBA or a PhD in economics or business, you know. But if you just have a rudimentary understanding of those subjects, you would know. And Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under the Clinton administration, a lawyer, he's out at Stanford, I believe, Berkeley. He's at Berkeley. He does something there, public policy or something. You know, really, really bright guy, you know, and really progressive in his thinking. And he did a breakdown of, you know, once expose, basically said, hey, if Trump had basically invested the money that his father had given him, he would be far more wealthy than he is now. And that says a lot. And I'd like to find that article. I asked Reich to republish it, but who am I? He doesn't know me. And, you know, I'll find it and post that at some point. But, the black community never appreciated the fact that, you know, we had to have both. We had to have revolutionaries, and we do, and they, some of them still languish in prison, and very few, you know, some I knew personally, you know, James York, Habib, and, you know, Albert Washington, or, you know, Badger the Assassin, these guys. Yeah, I knew these guys. You know, I remember all of these people, man, from, you know, back in the day. You know, they used to either pass through, because this was New York, and it was a small community, man, of revolutionaries, and these people were committed to that lifestyle, and, you know, members of my family, certain members of my family were also, you know, I had a cousin, actually my aunt, the one in Queens, that served a lot of time, you know, as a matter of fact, he did so much time. I remember when he went away, God, had to be the early 70s, man. You know, I wasn't even a preteen, and I basically never seen the guy again. I mean, he eventually got out of prison, don't get it twisted. I guess he got his degrees in or out of jail or prison, and took his family, his wife Jackie, I remember her, you know, and they became Muslims like a lot of them did. You know, changed their names and moved up to Rhode Island and raised their family. He was in Providence. And I've been to Providence. It's a nice little city up there. I wouldn't want to live up there. It's very cold. But, you know, he moved up to Providence, Rhode Island, and he was teaching at either Providence College or another college in the area. And he had a master's degree. I don't know what he was teaching. I'm sure it was something associated with policy, with public policy, sociology, social science, something like that in that area. And he passed. All my aunt's kids are on that side, you know, who were much older than me. They all died relatively young. All the children, you know, predeceased her. You know, they all died young. But, yeah. Butchie, we called him. But that one, you know, he changed his name. He had a name, you know, when he converted to Islam, al-Islam. I don't know if his children are still Muslims or not. They're doing extremely well. Obviously, they're adults now and with families of their own. And I haven't caught up with them. At some point, maybe I will, maybe I won't. I don't know. They would be not the kids, but you know, their mother. She would be. I figure she's about 9, 10 years older than me, so she would be, you know, she would be probably still around. I can't imagine that she'd. I'd just like to see her, see how she's doing. She's very attractive, very thin woman. When Butchie went away, and she lived with the mother. And they used to go down to South Carolina. That's where. And I never understood the whole story because Butchie was a Vietnam vet. I remember when he went to Vietnam. I got out and asked, you know, got involved in, you know, in the Black Panther movement. And so he didn't have a record at the time. So I never understood how, you know, how transporting those weapons got him, unless they had done something else down there. Maybe they did. I don't know. I never got the full story. They must have robbed the bank or something down there. I thought they were just transporting weapons, but I'm guessing. I don't know the full story, and I never asked anybody, you know, so that's that with that. Anyway, it's about time to go, boys and girls. So I'm going to get ready and step to the rear and get on out of here. But then you're praying for me. I didn't take any calls today, and I'm still working through a lot of personal issues as I transition from, you know, one place in my life personally to another place, both personally and professionally. When you're growing, it's often painful, and I am in some pain now, but you know, I'm a big boy, I'll get over it, and I hope you will too. So have a great week, and we should be back, God willing, same bad time, same bad channel next week right here, Mark and Paul International, New York, your sweet Dennis.
Yeah. vacation.